I'm very pleased now to, before we move on to questions, to call on our last speaker. I did try to look you up and see all the different things you did, geographical, geopolitical, social, and so on, but I couldn't find a way to sum up the many things that you did, so perhaps you can do that for us. But Professor Danny Dorling is going to speak to us about democracy and education.
Thank you. I'm a geographer, which means I'm allowed to do anything. The best subject in schools you can ever do. I'm going to talk about hope. In fact, I'm going to talk about signs of hope, because we don't have very much hope at the moment. But there are a whole series of signs of hope that I think it is worth recognising, grasping onto, and just seeing where these are likely to lead in the future, particularly if we encourage them. If we simply give up, go quiet, go back, then the things that are happening may not lead to what we would like to see happening. I saw hope yesterday. Oxfam organised a meeting in Oxford, where I work, to talk about inequality. And when it got up to over 600 students signing up, they had to bar the gates because too many of the students at the University of Oxford were trying to get in to hear a relatively old professor of economics talk about inequality because they are that interested. For the first time for many decades, a majority of students in my university voted Labour. They voted Labour in Cambridge. They voted Labour, unbelievably, in Bristol when the students were polled. They voted Conservative in the LSE. So, I know, shame. Shame on the LSE. Seriously, but the students have been polled, I know. But this, there are signs amongst what's happened in the election which are very interesting and hopeful. The young have been moving their votes. Oxford East, for a second time, raised its vote. It now looks like a pit village. It's 50% Labour voting in Oxford East. Cambridge turned Labour.
It doesn't disappear.
Bristol West turned Labour. London, dozens of seats. And what do all these places have in common? They're where people are young, they're where they are renting, they are not Nuneaton. Because the young leave Nuneaton and the young try not to go back to Nuneaton. The young vote, and increasingly the renting vote, and all the renters who are renting now are going to be renting in 5 years' time, and they'll be joined by another 5 years' worth of renters. And the students who are at university now, all 3 years, are paying £9,000 fees. That's three sets of year groups paying £9,000. You've got to add another 5 years of that. That'll be 8 years' worth of students paying, having paid those fees and facing paying them back. Time is actually on your side. A large chunk of the Conservative vote is going to be dead in 5 years' time. Other hopeful things, or other changes, and this is entirely due to comprehensive schools. This would have been entirely impossible under the grammar school system. For the last couple of years, half of the young women of England have gone to university. 50% of young women in England go to university, year after year. We are becoming majority graduate population. You've got to fool university graduates if you're going to tell people that they all just need to get into 1% and they'll be okay. This is going to be very, very hard to do. We've allowed people to have this freedom. We've taken them through. And then we're going to tell them that they have to work at a living wage or even a minimum wage job, despite the fact they have a university degree. And we expect them to blame themselves and think that they are a failure. This is the only way you're going to manage it. If you want to be more optimistic about this, I think this is optimistic. All these young people have these debts. These debts are unpayable. They're known to be unpayable. We know what the incomes of 31-year-old graduates are already, and they are very low in the majority of cases. The forecast house price for London by 2030 is now 1 million, an average price of 1 million. It's on 500,000 at the moment. Savills, their shares boomed after the election. Foxton's, their shares boomed. There's going to be a housing boom in London. We're heading towards an average house price of 1 million. And in 2030, 2025, who's going to buy these houses? The people who do really well, people who've been to university now, who get a job and who do really well, will be allowed to have to repay 56,000 or 66 or £70,000 worth of student debt at the time that they enter the housing market as first time buyers. There is absolutely no way that this housing market, which has been sustained by George Osborne's decisions, budget after budget, is going to survive 4, 5, 6, 7 years in the future, because our entire first time buying market has student debt to repay. And that is just sitting there. At the moment, we have a housing boom, just so that we can make the crash really spectacular when it happens. That's coming. If you didn't think that was enough, of course, we're going to have a European referendum coming up. The Scots used their referendum very cleverly, and it's a pity that it may be brought forward. I wish it would be 2017. Because you can talk about an enormous number of other things around the referendum. You can talk about what kind of society you want. What do you want to live in? What do you want the future to be? Because that's what a referendum about sovereignty really is about. It's about the future. And that referendum could be used in that way. And that's why they're going to try and rush it forward. The most remarkable thing happened at the election. The most remarkable thing since 1918. In 1918, a new third party emerged. They won 73 seats. They were called Sinn Féin. The first time that this has happened since 1918 is now with the 56 MPs of a very, very different party to the party it was 2 years ago. Those 56 people from everyday life, all kinds of people, not just the ex-oil economists, Hammond, there were socialists there, there were students there. They were about to turn up in London. And unless the TV cameras of London are going to studiously ignore them, they've got nothing else to do other than go on TV and explain how you can have a different way of thinking. I don't think we should necessarily lament that. There is also all kinds of chaos about to happen. If any of you have got a 17-year-old at the moment, you'll know this. Because universities, in this September, are allowed to take any number of students they want. It's the free-for-all has now happened. We were moving there slowly with children who got AAB, AAA and so on. Now any university can take any number of students. The number of unconditional offers has gone up fivefold. But there's a fixed number of 17 or 18 year old children. Huge numbers are going to turn up in some places. Other places are going to see a great disappointment. Places that get a great increase aren't going to be able to teach them or house them. The places that get a great fall aren't going to be able to teach them because they're going to have to sack members of staff. And all these young people are going to be paying this massive fee for the privilege of the chaos they are about to enter. And there is no way you can blame the opening up and the free-for-all on the past Labour government. That is this September, next September, next September. The numbers going to university are rising and rising. They're rising fastest from the poorest areas because there is nothing else to do at age 18 and 19. But these people are going to walk into a form of chaos. At the same time, you talked about students who are having to leave their school because their parents can't pay the bedroom tax. That is tiny compared to the revolution we've had in the last 5 years, where now one in four children in England is living in a private rented house. It has shot up to that level, to over 25% of families with children are in private renting in the whole of England. This means 50% in parts of London, 50% of families with kids in Oxford are private renting. And remember that house price boom? When house prices rise, as they're doing now, rents rise. It's twice as much to rent in Oxford than to pay a mortgage, if you can get a mortgage. The rents rise. The people who cannot pay the rents are the family with children. They're outbid by young professionals without children. And they have to move, and the kids have to leave the school and all their friends. And then it happens again 2 years later. In fact, in London, it's an average of 1 year later. children moving school again and again, losing their friends again and again. One in four children in Britain now in private rented, who can be kicked out in just 2 months. This is chaos. At the moment, people blame themselves. They say, if I'd only worked harder, I could have managed somehow to have bought that £500,000 house and get a mortgage. They're obviously wrong, they're fooling themselves. But they need to know they're wrong. They need to know it is not their fault. All those students who are going to university, who are picking up this massive debt, it is not their fault. And there is no way more than a tiny fraction of them can get jobs which will allow them to comfortably repay that debt. At the moment, they blame themselves if they don't get the £90,000 lawyer job in Canary Wharf. But at some point soon, they will begin to do the maths. They are not stupid. They cannot all get into the 1%. And that's what people need to understand over the next 5 years. As the chaos increases, it is not your fault if you are struggling. You couldn't have actually got in there in the first place because the ladder is being pulled up and the space at the top is being made smaller and smaller. This is not necessarily a great reason for hope that we're about to get chaos, but let's not let the chaos go to waste. Yeah. Let's not let people think it is their fault when it happens. More positively, a lot of the changes that happened in the 1960s and 1970s were done by grammar school children, grammar school boys largely, who came elected to Parliament, who became Prime Ministers, and who actually changed the world and got rid of their grammar schools to give us something better. We now have that something better. But most of the comprehensives were not turned into comprehensives until the 1970s. Many not until the early 1980s. You are only now seeing the first comprehensive generation come through. We only now have our first couple of heads of an Oxford College who went to a comprehensive. We've only now got to the point of having the first party leader who went to a comprehensive not win. But at least he went to a comprehensive. The comprehensive generation is young, it is not realised how young, and it is highly successful. Yeah. It is more successful in many ways than the grammar school boys, more confident than the grammar school boys, because the comprehensive generation didn't leave the rest of society at 11, the comprehensive generation stayed with the rest of society till 18. Those are formative years, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. You stay with everybody else for those years, you do not think that everybody else is scum. Mm. And this set of people are coming through, they will be the majority of people in power in about 5 or 10 years' time. By power, I mean high-paid jobs, and it'll be comprehensive women. That is the generation who are doing best, because women's advantage in education has been going on for years. I said 50% of young women are going to university. It's only about 38% of young men. In many places, what people are worrying about is young men. So it's women who've gone to comprehensives are going to be the generation who can be in charge in 5 or 10 years' time, and they will have a very different attitude to the people who went before them, including the grammar school men. Things change and things get better. Lastly, you mentioned the free school, so I'll end with the free schools in Oxfordshire. Oxfordshire, all the secondaries are academies. So the county council says, well, it's up to them. The academies just have to compete, and it'll be fine. But we've been having babies. Lots of them. We know we've been having babies because the primary schools are full. We're very lucky. We've had people coming from all over the world. A quarter of the people in the city of Oxford are born outside of the UK. Almost everybody, to be honest, in Oxford or Oxfordshire was not born in Oxford or Oxfordshire. So we're going to have to get a new school. We may be getting two. There are now two free schools competing for a place in the city of Oxford, secondary schools. Is this going to make people happy? Are parents who are already absolutely paranoid about the schooling system in this school going to be happy when suddenly a new site is opened up, disturbing all the reasons about why the slightly selfish paid ever so much more to try and get into the catchment of this one or that one or whatever? Are people going to celebrate and go to arms and say, oh, thank you for doing this, this is wonderful? Or are they going to realise that the reason why the units of resource is falling in their schools, things are getting worse in general, the fact you've got 1,800 kids in one school or the other, you've got people bailing out of private schools because in the private sector people are not being paid enough always to carry on managing to pay the elevated fees. And let's face it, well over half of the private schools are absolutely abysmal, and the parents sometimes actually work this out for themselves. you have chaos for parents about to come up. You cannot use the free market to allow you to introduce secondary schools and hope to get a happy population. But people need to be told that when things change for their children in education, when it's up in the air about what's going to happen to which school, when there's a sudden flight from one area to another, when house prices go up and down, when the universities offers you a place, and it doesn't matter what A-levels you've got because you're a little sack of £9,000, and then when you can't get a job at the end of it and can't pay that loan back, and you have to rent, and you have to pay more money in rent than you can ever pay because your wages are not high enough, people need to know it is not their fault. The only way the Conservatives can win in 2020 is to convince the majority of the population that they are losers because they haven't tried hard enough. And that requires education and basic numeracy to just get people to do the maths and add up and work out there was no way they could all have done well enough to have got into the very top 1% of society. And that is our job to start doing now, to explain to people that this is a government that can only benefit this tiny, tiny proportion. The students of my university are beginning to work it out, because the students at my university, Oxford and Cambridge between them, are 1% of the population, have worked out that most of them are not going to benefit in future from what's happening. Some of them will, they go into the city, they'll become rich, but the median student who graduates from Oxford or Cambridge University takes a job like a school teacher, and they're going to suffer as well. You cannot fool 99.5% of people all of the time. It is not possible. But the message needs to be spread. People have to stop thinking, if only they tried harder, they too could be very, very rich. Thank you very much.